Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our multi-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franson, here with my co-host, Greta Anderson.
Hi, Susan. Good morning.
Well, we sounded like a normal morning when we introduced ourselves, but it doesn't feel like a normal morning.
Everything has changed. We had prepared our headlines, Dewey defeats Truman, Clinton defeats Trump, but we'll have to throw those newspapers out and start over. We're fortunate to be here with Lydia Lavrova and Lucas Bliley.
How's it going?
As good as can be. And we're going to be talking with them and playing music and looking at some of the results in some closer detail today. Let's review some things that happened last night. In Iowa, Trump took the popular vote in Iowa by 150,000 votes. White women were expected to vote for Hillary, but in all age categories, the white women voted for Trump over Hillary. The Democrats on the federal level lost the Senate, which means all three houses, all three bodies, the president, the House, and the Senate will be Republican. This is a sure death knell for health care, for Obamacare. That is probably going to be destroyed. The Democrats lost the Senate in Iowa, so the same situation applies to Iowa. Governor's office, Senate and House, all three of these will be Republican, and Republican measures will pass with very little resistance. In fact, among the Iowa senators who fell was the Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstall of Council Bluffs. But that was expected to be a close race, a close issue, whether the Iowa Senate would remain Democrat, and it has switched over to Republican. Much more locally, we have Loris Olson in the Story County Supervisors seat. She has won. Loris defeated her Republican opponent, Scott Shaben, and the independent Clinton came in a distant third, showing that many people were voting straight party line and not interested in his third party campaign. Linda Merkin, however, the Democrat running for the other office, had a narrow loss to the Republican Chitty, who has been in the supervisor seat as an interim appointment after the death of Paul Toot. Chitty's very popular in Nevada. I'm sure he just swept the Nevada vote. He's the superintendent of schools in Nevada. Signs there everywhere, and Linda Merkin, the Democrat, lost by only 2 percentage points. So she put up a good fight. Difficult when you have a sort of incumbent in office. Everything else went as expected. We are still in Iowa, three House seats, Republican to one Democrat. Dave Loebsack in the southeastern district of Iowa, still part of the U.S. House of Representatives representing Democrats in Washington, D.C. Grassley swept to a victory, was called almost immediately, winning by 24 percentage points over Patty Judge. And given the fact that the Senate is now Republican and we have a Republican president, his strategy of delaying the appointment of a Supreme Court justice, the Republican strategy that Grassley executed as the chair of the House Judiciary Committee, turned out to be a good strategy for those who want to reverse Roe versus Wade and things like that. So we are facing a very conservative Supreme Court justice nominee, no doubt. We're going to play a song here and gather our wits and come back with more conversation with the young people. This is Greta Anderson here with Susan Franson.
And our guests,
Lydia Lavrova.
And
Lucas Bliley.
I know the mortar and
Welcome back to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio in November 9th, 2016. Here we are.
And we are with the people whose lives depend most on what happens now, a couple of millennials. And we were just discussing before the show started, what does it mean to be a millennial?
This is Lydia Lavrova and Lucas Bliley.
Hello again.
Hi.
So what does it mean to be a millennial? Is that the first question? I don't know. I guess it's just about growing up in this bizarre technological age, right, with like global warming also looming close by.
Which was not an issue in the campaign.
Not as much as it should have been, definitely.
Well, I mean, except that we do know that President-elect Trump plans to increase our oil exports and go full scale ahead on the extraction of fossil fuels.
And I'd just like to add that I think millennial has a very negative connotation. People look at us as a lesser generation, and that just might be a historical trend. The past generations kind of frown down upon the newer generation as more liberal. Some more traditional values are being forgotten, but I think for the most part, I expected in the millennial population to vote for a more democratic candidate, and in a lot of places that just wasn't the case as much as I thought I would see it.
Now, I personally don't have a negative feeling about millennials. I kind of look to the new generation to be coming up with new ideas and not be wedded to the past.
And as far as the millennial vote goes, I think I saw some graph last night that indicated millennials were not – they were expected to resist Trump, to be progressive and liberal, and that didn't manifest, that they were in the Trump category, the millennial. I was with a high school student a couple of days ago from Nevada, and she said that her school, Nevada High School, had a mock election in which Trump was the victor. So it causes me to wonder what it is that connected the young people to Trump. How about you folks? Did you have one of those mock elections?
Yeah, there was a mock election at Ames High, and the result was about 600 to 200 Clinton victorious. And so it definitely shows that there's a lot of liberal millennials and younger people in Ames and at Ames High School. And I think we have a very different view of the world than most of Iowa, seeing how the election turned out.
But maybe not different from your parents.
No. And I think just as Ames is very different from the rest of Iowa.
Yeah, I went to school in Gilbert, which is, you know, just a couple of minutes north of here. And I know that most of my classmates were voting for Trump. So, like, Ames is, like, so unique, right, that just, like, a couple of minutes out, it's, like, back to a very different kind of Iowa.
Right. And it's also an issue of class and income. The outlying communities outside Ames tend to have much lower income. Trump appeals to the white working class, the hard workers who are disgruntled with not seeming to get ahead, and whereas the Ames demographic is much wealthier and certainly better educated.
Well, but the yard signs don't quite agree with lower income. I have been living a little outside of Ames, so I've been passing a lot of rural yard signs, and I've seen absolutely not a lot of yard signs anywhere until just before the election, but I've only seen one yard sign for Hillary, and I've seen, before the primaries, the only yard signs I saw were for Trump, and more recently, they're pretty big fancy houses that have the Trump signs, so...
There are some very fancy Trump displays out in the country, I will say that.
But the negativity and mudslinging has been sufficiently bipartisan that I think a lot of people feel that they wish they hadn't had to go through it, no matter which candidate they supported. Reggie Greenlaw wrote a song for us today about this feeling. It's called Dead Fish. This song, Dead Fish, is for all of you who feel unwell today.
Thank you. come upon a dead fish on my sidewalk. Belly up, it lay right by my door. Big ol' eyes just staring up at nothing. Nothing gonna hurt it anymore. It didn't try to tell me how he got there. Big old mouth wide open, but nothing coming out. And while I sat there thinking, the more it started stinking, and my eyes teared up, and I knew beyond a doubt, if you find a dead fish, better not touch it. Dead fish, better leave it alone. Don't you fool around and grab it, and you best not take it home. Cause that fishy smell will follow you no matter what you do. Hold on to a dead fish sticks to you. Can't hide a dead fish in your pocket. Can't go and stick one in your clothes. Can't go telling folks that you don't have one when you do. Cause sooner or later everybody knows. Hold the dead fish, you can't point fingers. You can't go and blame somebody else. You're just gonna be found out when you hold on to a weak old track. Well, everybody gonna track that smell, and they'll tell you, got a dead fish, shouldn't have touched it. Dead fish should have left it alone. You fooled around and grabbed it. You took that odor home. That fishy smell has come around now, no matter what you do. You went and held a dead fish, now that dead fish sticks on you. Some folks tie dead fish to a ribbon and make it pretty. Others might just cover it in paint. Still others go around telling people that they need it and try to say it's something that it ain't. Politicians sometimes try to sell their dead fish on TV. It seems like they try to sell them every day. They hope you'll buy them and send them flying off to Washington, D.C. But if they try, then here's what you can say. Hey, that's a dead fish, ain't gonna touch it. I think I'll leave it alone. No fool ought to buy that thing, I sure won't take it home. Cause that desperate fell will stick to me before the day is through. I don't want that stink on my hands, brother, cause then I'll smell like you. Got a dead fish, better not touch it. Dead fish, I'll leave it alone. Don't you fool around and grab it. You best not take it home. That fishy smell will follow you no matter what you do. Hold on to a dead fish, a dead fish sticks to you. Hold on to a dead fish, and a dead fish sticks on you.
But I think some of us feel unwell this morning as well. And among those who probably feel a little nauseous is a guest on the phone lines, Laura Bellin, blogger for Bleeding Heartland. Laura, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
So you were up late last night adding to your blog, adding details as they came through. The big news, I guess, in Iowa is that the Iowa Senate flipped.
Yes, the Iowa Senate flipped, and in fact, Democrats even lost ground in the Iowa House, and that was not expected, given that it was a presidential year, and typically turnout is more favorable for Democrats in a presidential year. But yes, the Republicans took over the Senate majority, and it wasn't even close. They needed a net gain of 2 seats or 3 seats, and they won at least 6 seats, and there's a 7th seat that's very close with one precinct left outstanding. So right now it looks like the Democratic incumbent is going to hang on there, but the Republicans will have a comfortable majority in the upper chamber.
And what do you foresee this will mean for Iowa law? What are Republicans just anxious to get accomplished, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of things that they weren't campaigning on. I mean, one thing that was interesting about these legislative races is how much Republican candidates were relying on negative advertising about the Democrats that really said nothing about what the Republicans plan to do with the state. I think we'll see less funding for public education than we've ever seen before. I think we'll see a dismantling of some social safety net programs in Iowa. I expect the preschool program for four-year-olds may be at risk. I think collective bargaining rights for public employees are probably going to be on the chopping block. That's been part of the Republican playbook in states like Wisconsin as soon as they had control of all branches of government. I would expect some kind of restrictions on voting. I don't know whether they would eliminate same-day voter registration, but I certainly think that photo ID laws or other rules that are designed to suppress the vote are going to be on the table. I would not be surprised to see restrictions on abortion. There have been some restrictions that passed the lower chamber of the Iowa House and were stopped in the Iowa Senate, so at this point they have a clear path to do that. Certainly gun law is going to be changed. I would expect stand your ground legislation to pass, possibly also open carry legislation or doing away with the permitting process for concealed weapons.
Okay, quite a list there.
Oh, I'm sure there are more. Give me more time to think about it. It's going to dramatically change the state. I mean, if you look at what's happened in states like Kansas and Wisconsin, where Republicans controlled all three branches of government, they were able to do a lot of damage to the social safety net in a very short amount of time. And the public education system in the state universities in Wisconsin are really suffering, and I expect that to be happening in Iowa as well.
And that would be very relevant to our audience here in Ames. I saw you also post some or get involved in a conversation on Twitter about the woman vote. What happened to the woman vote last night?
Well, I don't know. I think we need to see in the exit polls. It's not really clear what's happening, and sometimes exit poll data is a little misleading. But it seems like what polls had been pointing to, a record gender gap shaping up for this election, and that doesn't seem to have happened. The white women vote does not seem to have deserted the Republican Party like the way it was looking like it would. And so we're going to try to – I mean, there are many, many layers to the systemic polling errors that were going on throughout this campaign across the country. One of them is that – college-educated voters, which it seemed like were rejecting Trump in large numbers, maybe didn't do so quite as much as we expected. And another aspect of that is the white women vote. So we need to see what happened. But I don't think we have all the data in on that yet. So I can't really speculate.
Uh-huh. Was there any good news last night?
Well, the Iowa Supreme Court justices were retained. And in a way, you have to wonder whether the social conservatives are regretting that they didn't launch a full-fledged campaign against them, because given how well this kind of anti-establishment, anti-elite campaign worked for Republicans in so many states, I wonder whether they would have been able to make a case against the three Iowa Supreme Court justices that were on the ballot. But it didn't happen. They were all comfortably retained by almost 2-to-1 margins. All of them had well over 60% of yes votes.
That's right. The Katie, Apple, and Hecht, the three remaining Iowa Supreme Court justices who had voted in the Varnum case that opened the door to same-sex marriage in Iowa.
And I would say, at least from Polk County perspective, we had a sheriff's candidate who was part of a very extreme movement of sheriffs across the country, and he was defeated pretty soundly. So that was good. And the inspiration for this radical sheriff's movement was Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona. He also lost his seat last night. So if we're looking for good news, there wasn't much of it, but those are a couple of things that come to mind for me.
That's right. I posted the news that Sheriff Arpaio had lost. He had been charged with criminal charges because of his refusal to listen to a federal judge about his actions and cease and desist them.
His discriminatory actions had already been cited, and he just refused to abide by the law. So.
Right.
Oh, one other thing that might be relevant to your listeners, since so many people are involved with Iowa State University, is that now that Trump is going to be president, one of the people who is a possible agriculture secretary in his administration would be Bruce Rastetter, who's the president of the Board of Regents. And I don't know exactly what would happen. Rastetter had joined a kind of a Trump advisory committee for agriculture issues. So, I mean, it's far from a guaranteed thing that he would get that position. There were lots of people from lots of states on that committee. But Bruce Rastetter is very close to the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, who is obviously in Trump's inner circle. And so that if he leaves the Board of Regents, he's been a very powerful board president at the Board of Regents. And so that could mean a big change in the governance board for Iowa State universities.
Well, considering who's going to replace him, who's going to appoint his replacement, it might not be that big of a difference. But
well, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, one thing about the Iowa Senate is you need 2/3 of a vote to confirm someone, and that means you only need 17 votes to block someone. And the Democrats are going to have more than 17 votes at the minimum. They'll have 18, but it's likely they'll end up with 19 or 20 senators. There's a special election coming up in Davenport in December to replace Joe Tseng, who passed away. That's a very Democratic district, and I would think that Democrats will win that seat. So Democrats will end up with probably 19 or 20, and so in theory, they still have enough votes to block an appointee of Governor Branstad's. Now, it's not likely it's likely that they would use that power sparingly. The past practice in the Iowa legislature has been that mostly the governor's nominees get confirmed, and only a handful of people each year don't get confirmed. But it's possible that Democrats are still in a position, if they want to go to the mat against one or two Branstad appointees, they would still be in a position to block that person.
Okay. And I suppose in the federal, the U.S. Senate, Democrats now have the power of the filibuster on their side.
Well, I don't know about that, because Republicans could eliminate the filibuster. I mean, that's one thing that a lot of people have been expecting. If Republicans ever gain control of all three branches of government, that they might just do away with the filibuster in order to allow more extreme appointees to the Supreme Court and other thing. So I wouldn't necessarily count on Democrats having the filibuster. Also, it should be noted that the 2018 map of U.S. Senate races is very unfavorable to Democrats. So I would guess that Republicans, whatever majority they end up with, and I think it's going to be 53 seats, it sounded like last night when I went to bed, that they could easily expand that by a lot in 2018.
There were some interesting Senate races last night. One victory for Democrats, Tammy Duckworth in Illinois, disabled woman, and then Russ Feingold, however, in Wisconsin, went down by a large margin.
I was very surprised by that, and I don't know what I'm going to need to do a little bit more reading about what happened in that race. I had heard that it was tightening up, but I just don't really understand what happened to Russ Feingold. I know that in the Indiana Senate race, that there were a lot of very damaging negative attacks on the Democratic candidate, Evan Bayh, but I don't think that Russ Feingold has that kind of baggage. The Democrats did hold on to Harry Reid's Senate seat in Nevada.
That's right.
And they elected the first Latina to the U.S. Senate, so that was a historic moment. But something strange was going on in Wisconsin, and I'm going to have to leave it to other people who follow Wisconsin politics more closely, because I don't think anybody expected the results. I mean, I think a lot of Iowa Democrats were braced for the worst, because we knew we had a fairly unfavorable Iowa Senate map of seats to defend, but the bloodbath that just happened in Wisconsin, I don't think anybody was expecting.
Well, I spoke with a researcher at the Center for Media and Democracy in Madison, Wisconsin, on Monday, I believe it was, and he said that the Koch money had really poured into that Senate race at the last minute, just quite a bit of money into the Republican candidates' coffers.
Right. Well, that's true. And there was a lot of money. There was a lot of outside money that poured into the Iowa House and Senate races. But something more is going on beyond just the money, because traditionally in Iowa, voters do reelect their incumbents to the state legislature, and a lot of incumbents have survived attacks, very negative campaigns. And something happened last night where almost all of the targeted Iowa Democratic incumbents lost, and Democrats were even losing in open seats and that should have been more favorable to them. So I don't really, I don't know exactly. We're going to have to look more closely at the details when the in the voting, but it's pretty discouraging for Democrats because given some of the seats we lost last night, I mean, there's no path to 51 Iowa House seats and 26 Iowa Senate seats without being able to carry some of these districts that are largely small town or rural, largely white working class. I mean, there aren't enough urban and suburban districts. So there were a couple of Democratic incumbents who were reelected last night who had a fair amount of money spent against them, and they were both in districts that have a large number of college-educated voters.
Cedar Rapids?
Cedar Rapids, Liz Mathis was one, and Jeff Danielson in the Waterloo-Cedar Falls area. His district includes the University of Northern Iowa, and he was reelected fairly comfortably. But the Republicans didn't spend as much. They kind of withdrew from his race a little earlier. They had spent a lot of money against him in the summer and early fall, and then they pulled back. I think they saw their polling that it wasn't getting them anywhere. But there just aren't a lot of paths for Iowa Democrats to win seats if we can't win some of these areas like Burlington, Council Bluffs. I mean, there just aren't enough heavily urban and college campus located seats to overcome a deficit in those white working class areas.
Yeah. It's the we spoke with somebody from North Carolina, an organizer there, a couple days ago, and you know they've been conducting these Moral Monday marches led by the NAACP, by the black leaders, and you know they were saying just we don't understand why the white working class is voting against their self-interest.
Well, and I haven't seen the final numbers that came out of North Carolina, but I think North Carolina is a state where you can argue that voter suppression really worked for the Republicans. I mean, they enacted a lot of restrictions on voting, and it did hurt. I mean, it was specifically designed to reduce African-American voting. The lawmakers literally commissioned a research report on how African-Americans vote in North Carolina, and then they just systematically limited those options. And it may end up in federal court what they did. I mean, the NAACP has filed a lawsuit over that. But I think that that's an example, although Iowa doesn't have as large an African-American population as North Carolina does, it's an example that shows you what can happen if Republican majorities and a Republican governor decide to go ahead and chip away at voting rights, that they can get a lot of mileage out of that. And we could see that in Iowa. We absolutely could see that happen.
Right. They did it with gerrymandering, and now it will happen with voting rights.
Right. And again, we also have in Iowa, we have a large number of people, approximately one in four people who are disenfranchised because they have a felony conviction. Approximately one in four of those people in Iowa are African-American, and that's thousands and thousands of votes as well. Now, that wouldn't have been enough to change the outcome. I think Trump is going to end up winning the state by 10 points. So I'm not saying that, you know, voter suppression in Iowa is responsible for this. I think this was part of a national wave. We saw it in counties all over the country in largely white counties, and Iowa was just part of a larger trend. But to keep that going, I absolutely expect Republicans in Iowa to try to do anything they can to reduce opportunities for what they perceive as Democratic constituencies to cast ballots. I expect them to attempt to do.
Okay. Well, Laura, we have a little audio from Ohio on the topic of voter suppression, so I think we're going to turn to that now. Any last words that you have for us?
Well, it's really discouraging, and I think, you know, I've lived through some landslide years, but mostly that happens in midterm elections when younger voters are less likely to turn out. And I think the biggest problem for Democrats right now is no one was expecting to get wiped out like this in a presidential election year, and we're going to have to do a lot of thinking on why that happened and how we can stop it from happening again, because the next presidential election year is a year ending in a zero, and that means it's going to be followed by redistricting all over the country, and we can't afford to get wiped out like that again.
Okay, thank you very much, Laura Bellin, Bleeding Heartland Blog.
Thank you.
Okay, and so...
Now, you said you have some audio?
Yeah, we have an affiliate network as part of the Pacifica network that KHOI is part of that connects us with community radio stations all across the country. And one of those stations is in Columbus, Ohio. The reporter, Evan Davis, spoke with a woman working on the topic of voter suppression in Ohio. And so we'll hear the kind of laws that can be enacted to discourage specifically targeted groups of voters. This is from Ohio.
And so early there was a case with regard to the reduction of early voting hours where the Republican Secretary of State had taken away essentially a whole week of early voting hours, as well as reducing some of the hours for the remaining time available. And that was challenged in the courts and went all the way to the Supreme Court.
It did. And the Supreme Court, the 1 week that they challenged was called Golden Week. And that's a week that allowed you to both register to vote and vote at the same time. And that was very, very popular with African Americans. And we lost that one, right? And we lost that one. It was a shame because at the same time, the U.S. Supreme Court and different federal courts and other jurisdictions had concluded that there was a concerted effort to restrict the black vote. And even though this was a very popular way for blacks to vote in Ohio, that was taken away from them. And I think the rationale was, well, there's a lot of other ways for them to vote. But it's interesting that the opportunities that were limited were the ones that benefited the Democrats the most, and the Republicans are the ones who made those limits possible.
And, of course, Ohio has voter ID requirements and other reasons why many people might be relegated to voting provisionally, be it address changes or not having the correct information, et cetera. And there have been some challenges over whether or not those provisional ballots would actually be counted.
Yeah, one of the other problems we're seeing is your provisional ballot will probably be counted with some mistakes in one county, and they won't be counted with those exact same mistakes in another county. And there was a lawsuit that took a look at those differences, and what they found was in large urban counties that have a lot of black voters who tend to vote Democratic, their ballots are more likely to be thrown out for trivial errors, but in smaller, rural, mostly white counties, they're likely to be counted. And so that one went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. We won some of those, but we didn't win all of those. And what we have in this election, unfortunately, is two separate sets of rules on whose votes counted and why. And the Secretary of State, John Husted, is always talking about how he wants uniformity. He was confronted with concrete information that the system is not uniform, and he did nothing about it.
This is the same Secretary of State who purged a number of voters here in Ohio, people who had not voted in the last two consecutive elections, whereas nationally the standard is not having voted for at least four.
And there was a study, once again, that took a look at who was disproportionately affected by the purging, and once again, it was people who tend to vote for Democrats. The Secretary of State's our chief elections official, and that office is supposed to bring a bipartisan approach to elections. Elections shouldn't be partisan. They should be fair. And every step of the way, when he used his discretionary authority, what we saw him do was make decisions that unfairly hurt the party to which he does not belong. And so if you were purged, you can cast a provisional ballot. The courts have said you can do that. But once again, we've had this two-tiered system where in some counties your provisional ballot might count, and in some counties they don't. If you are casting a provisional ballot, very carefully fill it out. They want your they want all of your information to be correct. You have to fill out all the blocks, your name, your address, the date, your birth date, all that kind of stuff. Make sure you fill it out, because if you leave one of those blank, there's more likely a chance that your vote will not be counted.
And a lot of people whose votes or whose registrations were thrown out, as well as those whose registrations might be invalidated for one reason or another, tend to move a lot because they are in a lower income bracket. And so might there be an issue where somebody isn't sure if their registration is updated and provides their correct current address on provisional ballot, even if that's different from the address that they're registered under. And even if all of the information is correct, they still might have that provisional ballot thrown out.
That's absolutely correct, and that's really sad. And one of the other things we're seeing is an increase in voter intimidation. The Trump campaign has people at some of the polling places with bullhorns. They're specifically targeting women from my demographic. They're underestimating us. They're not going to scare us away from voting. And I think it's just shameful that they're trying.
And that was Evan Davis interviewing Evan Davis of the Pacifica Radio Network, interviewing Sandy Tyes, Executive Director of the citizen lobby group Progress Ohio. We thought we'd listen to what might happen in Iowa with our voting rights, given the overtaking of all three branches of government by Republican majorities. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, together with Susan Franzen, and we have in the studio with us two young guests, Lydia Lavrova, who was able to vote. She's over the age of 18, and Lucas Bliley, who has not yet reached that magic number. So what did your Facebook feeds look like last night?
Well, everybody seemed pretty devastated. There was a lot of, you know, just like one, two-word Facebook posts and then pictures of people crying, honestly.
Yeah, I saw a lot of, like, God help us all, and a lot of very, very, like, the word they used on PBS last night was despondent, and you saw that coming through in the young people, at least I'm friends with on Facebook. Again, that's the Ames group of young people, which is more liberal, I guess, than the rest of the United States. But they were worried about their rights because many of them are minorities because they're the sons and daughters of people who have come here because of the college, and so I think you're exposed to who's being hurt by this election by living in Ames more than you would be, say, if you lived in rural Iowa. And I think that's a dangerous thing if Trump supporters are voting and not seeing the consequences of and who the people they are hurting. If they don't see that, I think that's a dangerous thing.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, well, one of the things that your remarks brought to mind, since we're talking about how you got your information on Facebook. During the primary season, I became really, really aware of how targeted our information is, because during the primary season, I got so many political feeds from my friends. But if I'd had different friends, I would have got different Facebook feeds, and I think we would have been living in different bubbles because you know, I remember, I believe it was your sister, Paulina, was on a panel of high school students. And she said, I'm supposed to be falling in love with Bernie. But she had a lot of good things to say about Bernie. But it was very clear that that was what she was seeing. And I think it had a huge effect on fundraising for Bernie in particular. People who never have, you know, been involved before suddenly saw all this. They saw the possibilities. And I think that this was probably true with people in other bubbles.
Yeah, you certainly just described me when you described that person. For the first time, I volunteered for a political campaign, and that was the Bernie Sanders campaign. For the first time, I donated money to a political campaign, and that was also the Bernie Sanders campaign. So, yeah, Bernie got me interested in politics, when he lost, I think a lot of young people just were like, okay, I don't care anymore. And I think that's being shown in the results.
Yeah, I think we heard Laura Bellin talking about how the Democratic Party needs to reorganize, rethink its strategies. Certainly the influence that the party structure and party rules and party elite had over the nomination of Hillary Clinton was you know, possibly something that really backfired in terms of getting that kind of enthusiasm out there. You know, this is a year of change, there's no doubt, but Bernie had a message that really spoke to change.
Although, under the circumstances, you could argue that maybe he was better off not being out there to be targeted, because nobody was saying, I mean, there were only dismissive remarks about his socialism, but if he had been at the top of, you know, if he'd been the nominee, we would have had, as somebody said on another program at KHOI, red baiting like you haven't seen for decades.
Hmm. Well, in a way, red baiting relies upon an educated, minimally educated populace who knows what socialism and communism is. And there was some evidence that those words have lost some of their impact on voters, that they don't mean, they're not the huge black mark that they were in earlier decades, but who knows? The question is, where do we go from here? How do we rebuild our community? How do we stay sane during these 4 years? How do we advocate for our peers who are of different origins? And how does this all happen? What are we going to do?
I think, first off, everybody needs to accept the results of the election. This was democracy, and the people elected Donald Trump, and that's a reality we have to live with. That being said, I think if you are in a place such as Ames, where there are a lot of minority groups and you're friends with a lot of minority groups, reach out to them, talk to them. If they're being mistreated by a new piece of legislation that we see in the near future, just be there for them. You might not be able to change anything politically, but you can be there to make things better, just in terms of moral support.
Yeah, definitely. Just talking amongst each other and just being aware of what's going on, I think, is going to be super important now that we have Donald Trump as president, just like knowing what's going on, so that if anything, you know, things that are objectionable do start happening, like people notice quickly enough and can respond.
Right. Yeah, I just the other day offered my services as a mental health counselor for a destitute friend of mine. I have no training, no background, no certification. I will receive no money for this transaction, but this person in my community needed a mental health counselor. And so Iowa being what it is, without any mental health services, I said, I'll do it. And so I think, you know, we have to maybe think outside the box in terms of helping each other, providing the services that that we all need, living in community.
Yeah, living in community is a concept that I have heard, except from a radical Catholic a few years ago. Well, that's another story.
And, you know, another demographic, certainly that needs to be reached out to, are the people who voted for Trump.
Oh, yes. We need to. These are our friends and our neighbors. And do we have time for sometimes they're very close relationships of ours? Do we have ditto woman? You know, this is the problem. We are isolated, even in our neighborhoods. In a recent caucus year, there was one of our reporters who went out to a Democratic caucus and a Republican caucus in her neighborhood. That year the Democrats were all together because it was an off-year election. And she said she went to the Democratic caucus and she knew half the people there. It was a big group of people. She went to her Republican caucus, which was in her neighborhood, you know, the people on her street, presumably, or, you know, a block away. She didn't know anybody. Now, if we're that isolated in our neighborhoods, we don't have to talk to our neighbors about politics. We have gardens, we have weather, we have all the old things that people used to talk about that maybe our kids. You know, we do have some important things to talk to our neighbors about besides the Iowa legislature or what's happening in Washington.
Once again, you're speaking to getting outside the bubble.
Yes.
Outside the bubble that politics as spectator sport often puts us in. We've gotten a lot of entertainment mileage out of this election. And
speaking of entertainment, here's a lighthearted song by Reggie Greenlaw that deals with the serious subject of divided couples.
We wake up in the morning by the dawn's early light. Climb out of the left side, she crawls out of the right. Walk over to the dresser, I consult with my crystal, and she checks under her pillow for her 38 pistol. She says I can't complain about her buying ammunition, 'cause she gets it at a discount through her secret coalition. When I saunter down the stairs, my baby tells me, hush, stop making all that racket, 'cause her radio's on rush. She's my little woman, my right-wing baby, my little woman, my conservative half. They ask me how we do it, and all that I can say is that I love the way she loved me in traditional ways, She had a pair of pets that I thought were kind of cute. A little dog named Bachman and a goldfish named Newt. Bachman got in trouble when she got the carpet soiled, and Newt was feeling sickly, so I flushed him down the toilet. It felt good. We got an understanding that keeps our love intact, is that she don't call me a commie, I don't call her a fascist. If she don't want my opinion, then all I say is, well, stop here, baby, just don't ask and I won't tell. My little woman, my right-wing baby, my little woman, and I got such a crush. My little woman, and I'm thinking that maybe I got her heart and soul, but her head belonged to Rush. Now we got our little problems, for better or for worse. Sometimes she hides my letters if the content seems perverse. And though I'd love to tell you how she loves romantic adventures, can't tell you anymore, 'cause the topic has been censored by my dear woman, my right-wing wife, with whom I wish to share a bipartisan life. They wonder how we do it, and all that I can say is that I love the way she loved me in traditional ways. Yeah, I love the way she loved me in traditional ways.
Any last comments, Lucas Bliley and Lydia Lavrova, our young people's guests who produce a show called Young People's Guide to Voting on KHOI Community Radio once a month?
I would say first of all, accept the results of the election, even if you're disappointed. Either side always has to do that. And if you're disappointed, I compel you to get out and maybe volunteer for a campaign in the next election cycle. I think you should. I think everybody, or a majority of the people who are so angry at Trump's victory, didn't volunteer a single hour, and they did that because they thought, oh, voting's the most important part. But really, a lot of the time, the advocacy of a young, passionate person is going to do a lot more than just one vote. And so I want to remind everybody that even though maybe the candidate they didn't want won, that they still have the power to get out and do something to change it in the future.
Yeah, and we're not going to have anybody marching on Washington with arms.
Right.
Right. That was suggested, you know, as a possible thing to do if you didn't like who got elected.
I've heard someone speaking of a general strike the first day of Trump's presidency. Lydia, did you have something to say?
Oh, well, just I think what Lucas said is really good, that, yeah, voting, sure, it matters, but there's so much more. And I think, especially if you're really unhappy with the results of this election, it's important to think about what else you can do politically. Like, it's important to get involved at a local level, and think about, like, more maybe subversive ways of affecting politics in your region.
Subversive, like making friends. Talking to people. We'll listen to a little bit of Bob Dylan here.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall. Oh, what did you see, my blue-eyed son? And what did you see, my darling young one?
Well, you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Susan Franzen. And we've had two special guests, Lydia Lavrova and Lucas Bliley.
And a Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Thanks to Ron Carson for taking care of the technical details of these posts, with information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Although, I guess today's stories won't have any links.
Oh, we've got links.
We do.
We got connections.
Okay. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings on your news feed. Local Talk was engineered by Greta Anderson.
And we heard some good music today. We heard R.E.M.'s song, World Leader Pretend. And, of course, we're listening to Bob Dylan's Hard Rain Gonna Fall from the Freewheelin' Bob Dylan album.
Two original songs recorded in our studio by Reggie Greenlaw.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter or engineer, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
Sound of a clown who cried in the alley. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.